Tuesday. Today, episode 3868, and today's show is called Cash, Inflation, and the Clown Show. Yeah, let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. Let's just go through the bullet point list real quick to give you a primer on it. The penny is dead. Long live the penny, except the penny is dead. Now, we actually found out about this back in November last year, but the death day approaches. And it's basically what was announced was this is going to happen, but exactly what it's going to look like, we don't know yet. That takes an act of Congress, and the act of Congress has gone through, and the penny is dead. Well, they're gutting the nickel, literally. I mean, literally gutting the nickel. I'll explain when we get to it. Basically, we can't afford to make nickels anymore. Not out of what we've made nickels out of for like over 100 years. We've so devalued the money, we can't make little metal discs out of copper and nickel anymore. So we have to make them out of zinc and very little nickel now, just like we went to zinc pennies back in 1982. It's just another example of the death of fiat currency, honestly, and what I also think is the war on cash. Next, there's a study. This has been out a while. I've seen the heat map many times. I actually dug into it over the weekend. It's actually very telling, but not very surprising. It's a study on how liberals and conservatives look at the world around them from a standpoint of what they worry about. Now, some people have misinterpreted this, what they do something about, because there's flaws, that all people are flawed. But what are they most focused on? What do they most look at, right? Where are they most externally focused? And again, when I tell you the results, I don't think you'll be surprised. Lindsey Graham passed away, senator, long-term senator from South Carolina. I don't care. I'm not going to pretend to care. I will tell you why I don't care, because I've been asked why I don't care. And the answer is, well, I'll tell you when we get there, but I don't care because it's not going to affect my life. And I don't have a lot of harsh words for Graham, but I have no kind ones either. So I just don't care. And I think it's okay to not care. And I think we need to maybe realize that it's okay to not care about some things, you know. Well, we're also going to talk about false nostalgia. A little video showed up in my feed this weekend. I'll show it to you if you're on the video. I'll describe it if you're on the audio. But it started this whole enamorment about how great stick shifts were. And then one person even said that we should have them because that way it will keep stupid people from driving. I don't know about you, but I grew up in the 80s where everybody knew how to drive a stick shift. And I knew a lot of stupid people could drive stick shifts. So I don't think that's going to help us. But the real question is, what is all the nostalgia really about? Like, the hipsters love record players, right? And then everybody tries to make a defense of this. There's a reason they pretty much went extinct and are now brought back as a novelty. What are we actually pining for? You know, there's going to be like, I don't see a lot of people pining for cassette tapes or for 8-track tapes. It's just they pick one thing in each niche and then they pine for that thing. But why? What do they really want? It's not the thing. I think it's just a little interesting thing to look at from a psychology standpoint. And then solar and farms can work together. I've talked about this a bunch of times, as little offshoots. So this weekend I came across this image on, of all places, LinkedIn. And it was a picture of cattle grazing under solar panels. I thought it was really cool. And I said, you can, instead of shrieking about my farmland, why not advocate for this? And half the people that responded to it lost their minds, told me I'm drinking my own Kool-Aid. That's not the way they do it. Yeah. What is wrong with people? What is wrong with people that are so caught up in this world of, they're black-pilled about everything, and they buy all the propaganda spouted at them as long as it's not the mainstream propaganda for the mainstream people. You know, they make propaganda for you, too, and they make propaganda for you that also bleeds into the mainstream, you know, data centers, solar, whatnot. They're taking all the farms away, you know. And somebody pissed off. I had this farmer. He lived next to me, and he was in his 60s, and he didn't want to farm anymore. So he sold his farm, and he moved to Florida. Shouldn't you be able to sell your farm and move to Florida? Shouldn't you be able to do that? Right? Shouldn't you be able to sell whatever the F you own to whoever the F you want to and move wherever the hell you want to go? And if farming's so great, why do so many people not want to do it anymore? Maybe because we're growing more food than we need and we're putting half of the food into ethanol. And how much food gets thrown away? And maybe it's just an underpaid occupation because we've subsidized it into overproduction and we're producing the wrong things. And do you want to try to make the case to me that a field of solar panels is worse for the environment than a field of corn and soy in rotation with glyphosate and all the shit that they spray? They spray solar panels. Yeah, I just gave you a solution, but you can't see the solution because I am convinced there's a lot of people, they do not want solutions. They just want to stop something, but they have no counter proposal other than let's just not do it. Most things that happen in the world happen for a reason. And it's not always because they're trying to kill us all. Sometimes it's because there's a market demand for something. And when you understand market demand, then you can design to the demand and you can actually do better. See, that's a permaculture principle. All the permaculture people pissed off about solar panels. This is insane. Let's talk about it later today. Anyway, how about Rhode Island said, we got to stop these self-checkouts. It's inconvenient and they're taking our jobs. It won't work. And I'll tell you why. Once again, we have the sawmen that want to burn down the sawmills. And there's still plenty of sawmills left. And that was a few hundred years ago and some. Okay. Right. 4 centuries ago and 7, right? Something like that. It didn't work then. Won't work now. Trump is going to charge tolls to pass through the strait. So Iran's like, we will not let you go through the strait, even though it's not our waters. It's actually international waters and Omani waters that these people are going through, just saying. Without paying us a toll. And Trump's like, yeah, we're just going to blow your shit up. We're going to make sure people can get through the strait. Now, we'll see if he can actually do it or not. But, hey, you know, this toll idea is a good idea. Why don't the United States charge? We're sending all this aircraft carriers and munitions and everything to police the thing so that you can go through it. Why don't we charge you for it? Now, is he crazy? Can that actually work? Right? And that's really the only, like, one of the things I try to get you guys to stop doing, don't make everything binary. A or B, Pepsi or Coke, right? Like, they're both sugar water and they taste like ass. How about water? How about tea? How about a freaking beer? How about a glass of wine? Right? You know, how about sparkling water with a little lemon squeezed in it? Like, you don't have to make everything binary. So, is it possible that Orange Man is up to something a little bit different here? And is there precedent for it working not so long in the past? Like, I mean, like less than 2 years, like this term, has he already pulled this maneuver and did it actually sort of kind of work? And is that what he's doing? Or is he just nuts? I don't know. I'm not going to say that I know. I'm not going to tell you he's a genius. I'm not going to tell you he's an idiot. I'm going to tell you, the guy's precedent, and I'm not, despite everything they threw at him. And we should at least examine things from potentials. Like, what is potentially going on here? Is this the bottom of the Bitcoin market right now? I've been asked that a bunch lately. My answer is no. It's not the bottom. The bottom is probably coming in the fall. The bottom is probably significantly lower. But I'm going to tell you why I think that doesn't matter. I talked about accumulation troughs last cycle when we were down under $20,000 and down under $15,000, and a lot of you didn't listen. This is the new accumulation trough. It's very long. It lasts about a year. DCA every day. We'll talk about that. And is it time to celebrate? There's great economic news out, folks. I want you to know it's over. We won. We beat inflation. It was only 3.5% in June. Now, that is annualized, right? So I'm not saying prices went up 3.5% in June. When you take the rate of inflation in June and you prorate it across the year, it was 3.5%. The Fed's target is like 2. So they failed by almost half, but they were going to fail by 3.8. It dropped a third of three-tenths of a point from what it was projected to be. It's still an abysmal failure. But hey, it's great economic news. Yeah, only in this effed up world we live in could anybody ever try to make the case to you with a straight face that this is good economic news. Well, this makes me think back when I was in sales, if I was going to like miss my quota, like let's say I was carrying, like when I was with Fluke, I was carrying a $225 million quota my first year, $225 million. If I was like, I'm going to be off on my quota by $70 million this year. But then, you know, I power it on it. Like, I was only off my quota by $55 million. You know, I would have gotten fired. Fired, but no one's ever going to fire the Federal Reserve, right? They're an institution. They're federal. Yeah, no, they're not. And then I just want to give you a quick warning at the end of today's show. There is a huge new rash of phishing emails going around, and they're following a common pattern. And it's being done in crypto, but it's also being done in a lot of other, like, bank accounts, credit cards, etc. And it's a little bit of a new approach to the old scam. And, yes, that is a Trumbuschino. I have a couple show and tell items for you guys today from the garden. That's just one of them. And we'll get to those right after we introduce our sponsors of the day. So sponsor of the day, number one today, is Joel Riles with canineacademy.us. You know, you can have the dog you've always wanted because your dog's not a problem. I mean, I don't know. There's probably some special, as Carlos Mencia used to say, diddy dogs or whatever. But, you know, 99 out of 100. Probably 999 out of 1,000 dogs can be great dogs in your home. And what it requires is the owner to be trained on how to train the dog and then consistent training of the dog. We have wonderful dogs. We always have. And that's because we follow this type of thinking. But what happened when I met Joel Riles is I thought I knew dog training. And I did. But if I was like, you know, the guy that could, you know, get into the competition for best dog trainer, now I'm more like, you know, maybe I could win a silver medal with Joel getting the gold. He is an amazing trainer, and he's taken what he knows about training dogs, and he's made it where you can access it online at canineacademy.us. And I'd really appreciate it, guys. If you're going to sign up with one of Joel's classes, including the free one you can try, please go to thesurvivalpodcast.com first and click on the banner on the website, because the agreement that I have with Joel, it just helps me if you'll do that. Next up today, you know, a lot of us invest a lot of money in gear, guns, you know, optics, night vision optics, thermal optics, cameras, electronics, and to then go throw that kind of very expensive equipment into a soft-sided case, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, when we look at casing, probably the gold standard out there are things like Pelican, Hardig, and SKB. And that's what you'll find at thecaseplace.com. Now, there's a couple things you need to know about this. First of all, you're already looking at saving 50 to 80% when you do business with The Case Place. But, well, not done yet. If you're an MSB member, you get a full 10% off in addition to these already discounted prices. What if you're not MSB? Well, they reached out and asked me if it was okay. And I said, as long as it's less than the discount you do for my members. And they said, okay, we want to do 5% for everybody. So there's an open code that anybody can use by using the banner on the website, the survivalpodcast.com website. Click on The Case Place and give you the code right at the top of the screen. It's TSP. You get 5% off. And again, you're already looking at 50 to 80% off. These are awesome cases. Their condition is wonderful. They're definitely something you want to check out. And again, I want you to just think about the value of the gear that you have, and then, you know, what is the cost of insurance by simply putting it in a solid protective case, the kind you know you can depend on, that's also lockable. Check out thecaseplace.com and see to that need. All right, real quick before we get into this little show and tell I got here, I just want to also remind you guys that Laws of Life Book 2 is available. I did an interview last night with Billy Bond. I think went really well on his YouTube channel. I also streamed it on mine, so maybe you could catch it there if you want to as well. But if you have not picked up yet a copy of Laws of Life, Now Build the System for Your Life, which is Book 2 in the series, please consider doing so. And I'm telling you, if you have younger folks in your life who are at least willing to take a shot at improving their lives, this is an incredible gift that you could give to them. I put a lot of my heart and soul into this, and I promise you it'll be worth the investment if you pick up a copy. All right, so let's start off with the show and tell, right? So this, for those on audio, that is not a sound effect. That's real.
This is my biggest Trombosino so far this year anyway. I'm going to say it's about 35 pounds. And I probably shouldn't sit it in my lap like this, but, you know, it is what it is. But this is, when I talk about having a really great year in the garden this year, this is some of what I'm talking about. For those that aren't familiar with Trombosinos, they can be consumed when they're much smaller than this as a summer squash. They're not immune to vine borers, but they're very, very resistant to vine borers and squash bugs. But with a Trombosino, everything from, you know, my hand up here at the point like I'm playing a guitar down to where the bulb begins to expand, this is all solid squash flesh or squash meat, right? There's no seeds in this. So you can peel this and this all can be baked, used to make squash soup, whatever. And then the bulb, obviously you can get stuff out of it. That's more like a butternut tends to be at the bulb, where it's a little bit of flesh and a lot of seed. But I'm thinking, when I process this one, I'm going to save these seeds and I'm going to make some seeds available to people that come to the fall workshop. Let me set this down carefully so it doesn't bash itself open. I got one other garage show and tell item for you guys today. You might have heard me in the past talk about Indian snake beans. This is an Indian snake bean. Now, they're not actually a bean. They kind of look like a bean, and they certainly have a very bean-like flavor to them. For those on the audio, this thing is, what, 5 foot? 5 foot long, and it's, you know, I can get my hand around it, but you mean if you shot a buck and that was the base of the antler and you put your hand around it, you'd be pretty damn happy about it. These things, guys, you need to try this if you've never tried this. The way people describe the flavor is a mix between green bean and asparagus. I don't like saying it that way because there's nothing asparagus about it. It doesn't, if there's that flavor that you either love or hate in asparagus, it doesn't have that flavor at all. And it doesn't really have that texture. To use one even this big, all you do is peel it like with a regular potato peeler and then slice it up in like matchsticks and cook it. And it tastes like green beans sort of, but not really. And I think that's why people say green bean and asparagus. These are amazing. They also have like a red flesh in them that can be used like tomato paste. And the seeds can be popped out. It depends on how big they are. One this big is going to have some pretty red flesh in it. If you let them go a little bit longer, they start to actually get a little bit of orangey brown on them, and that's when that flesh inside is really ripe. But this guy's big enough that when I process this later today, I'll be able to take seed out of it. And again, I'm going to make seed available at the fall workshop from probably more than one. We'll probably eat some of that too at the fall workshop. I guess I think that, maybe not that one, but some of them, because I got a lot of them on the Trombosino, is going to be going into squash soup. So we used to do a really good soup that was a squash and butternut squash and apple soup, and that's a great thing in the fall. I'm going to see what I can do with that, because the one thing I'll say about they do not quite have the richness of a butternut. They don't have as much flavor. So I'm going to play with that and see if I can figure out ways to bring more flavor to the party, because, man, I can make a gazillion gallons of soup out of those this year. All right, so let's get stuck into it. Since we have eaten so much introductory time, but I just thought that would be fun to do there. Last November, I told you the penny was dead, and it had been coming for a long time. And everybody knew that it had to happen eventually, because we literally got to where every penny we made, the country lost money, which means you lost money, because the country doesn't pay for anything, the people do. The country, I wish I could say it was the people, but the country's the government. When they're talking about it that way, right? The government losing money means the people are losing money, because the government has one source of money, you and me, okay? So you can't keep making something at a loss forever. Even the government can't do that forever. And it doesn't make any sense. So if you're an old fart like me, you might have been in school in the early 80s, and you might remember, okay, that in about 81, 82, there was a penny shortage beginning. And it's because the price of copper went up so much that people were melting the penny. Well, that's illegal. Yeah, but it's, once you do it, it's just copper with a little bit of zinc in it, right? Like, you can't really stop it. And then people started hoarding them, because this is 82. 64 was when they pulled this bullshit with silver money. Right. So by 1965, you had a few coins left with 40% silver in them. And by 66, everything was no silver, zinc clad copper. So people had seen that happen before. Their parents had hoarded silver. So people started hoarding pennies. It created a penny shortage. And they ran like propaganda things to try to get pennies into the bank. And so what they did with us, I was in second grade in Catholic school. This was right before I got myself kicked out of Catholic school the first time, right? Because I managed to do it twice in my school career. I got kicked out of Catholic school twice. But they had us bring and they specifically wanted pennies. Go to your mom, your grandma, your dad, your uncle, your father's cousin's uncle's former roommate, anywhere you can, and ask for pennies. And we're going to have you guys bring your pennies in, and we're going to learn how to open a bank account. So we opened a savings account with a local bullshit bank, right? And they literally had a bank lady come in and tell us all about it. We counted our pennies, and we put them in little papers, and we opened bank accounts with them. And then all of a sudden, this crisis of missing pennies went away in 82 because they stopped making them out of copper. And if you, here's the thing. People think it's 82 and forward or not. And 81 and back are copper, but it's not true. About half the pennies in 82 are zinc and half are 90% copper. And you can actually prove this to yourself. If you get a penny that's older than 82, so you know it's copper, and you flick it like you're going to flip a coin, but you flick it just right so that your thumbnail kind of bangs it, it makes a certain ring when it's spinning. It's like, bing! And then if you take one from 83 and go flip, it makes a like a dull thud. It doesn't have the same like pleasing ring because cheaper metal, zinc. Well, if you get a whole bunch of 82s together, you start playing with them, you'll find like half of them are copper and half of them have made the switch. So it was right in the middle of that year they made that switch. And that was because we couldn't afford to make a little round piece of copper for a penny. Now, copper was originally chosen for the penny because it was so damn cheap compared to the power of a dollar that they were going to make pennies out of this forever, right? No, apparently not, because we screwed it up. In fact, if you go look at like the 1800s, a penny was about the size of a quarter, and it was solid copper back then. So we've been in this kind of fiat destruction mode of the last vestiges of hard money for a long time. So again, November last year, we can't make pennies anymore. It's not worth doing. And they're like, well, I don't know how we're going to, what do you do when it's, you know, 87 cents? And so they just passed a new law. And this law allows anybody, once it's signed and into law, which it will, it's going to pass no problem. When you go to a store and it says 87 cents, it's just going to go to 90 cents. And I bet you what the stores are going to say is if you pay with cash. So you're going to have to answer, you know, cash or credit, cash or card. And the minute you do that, the system is going to make that decision for you, right? So you know, 86 cents, well, it goes up to 90 cents. You're going to steal 4 cents from me. You'll get over it. It ain't worth that much. Trust me, that's why we don't make pennies anymore. But there's an interesting little tidbit. And Thomas Massey, who seems to like, whatever give a F meter he had since he lost his seat is gone. He's just scorched earth everywhere. He did this post. I'm not going to try to read it out to you, but basically here's what it says. The nickel will basically have all the copper removed from it. So the nickel right now is 25% nickel around a core of 75% copper. Well, the copper is all becoming zinc. And it gives the latitude to the mint to decide how much nickel to use in a nickel. And their only requirement is, within reason, whatever that means to government, if you put it in a vending machine, it has to work. As long as a normal person would recognize it as a nickel and it will go in a vending machine and work, then you can do it. Now, I think the real goal here is to get rid of cash altogether. I think that's been the case for a long time. I remember my dad talking to me about this. My dad and I were talking about a long time ago. I was a kid when this whole idea of a war on cash came up. But what it actually tells us more than anything else is, once again, we can't produce coinage even after we have completely neutered coinage to having any actual value. And it just so happens my wife and I decided to do like an inventory of our silver. And this weekend, we had some remodeling work done. I had to move one of the safes. So let's go ahead and just get an inventory, make sure we have everything up to snuff. And we're sitting there counting because we have a lot of, you know, junk silver, basically silver quarters, silver dimes, or whatever. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at like $10 worth of quarters. And I'm thinking about how the minimum wage at the time that they took the silver out of the quarter was like $1.25 an hour. And I start doing some math in my head at like $56 an ounce silver, which is what you would actually expect to get. It's $62 or whatever. And like, you're not getting what they say, right? That's what they sell for. You're going to get somewhat under that number. But I'm just going like, you would live pretty damn good on $1.25 an hour minimum wage right now in 2026 if they had to pay you with these. And it's just an interesting way to look at it. And somebody says, burn it all down, Thomas Massey. Yeah, I'm for it as much as you can anyway. Let's talk about this study now. So I found this. I've seen this. And I just, honestly, I wasn't interested enough in it to dig into it in the past. I'm going to play the audio for this for you. And if you don't hear audio when I start this, somebody please let me know, because that's the only way I know is if you tell me you can't hear it. And I'll explain it if you can't hear, because sometimes you can hear and sometimes you can't. But let's just go ahead and give this a listen. And this is, again, a study, a legit study published on a legit study website. I have a link in the post to the actual study that they're talking about. But what you're seeing on the screen right now is a heat map. And the closer to the center of the screen, the closer to yourself you are, and the further out on the, like, kind of the radar looking heat map there, the further away from you you are focusing on what you're concerned about. So if you're in the center of this, you're concerned about things like your kids, your house, your neighbor and your neighborhood, how hard you work, your personal health. If you're way out there, you're concerned about, you know, some group of migrants in Sudan that you have no influence over whatsoever, and your focus is purely external versus internal. With that in mind, let me go ahead and play this for you. And again, if you can't hear it, please tell me.
This crazy study that they did where they interviewed people on the left versus people on the right. What do people prioritize based on their political beliefs? And so they had these concentric circles. It was right. The first most circle, second, third most, fourth, and fifth. And so people that were on the right, they asked, like, what do you value? And they went through this study, and they self-ranked what they prioritized. And the first was, you know, I take radical ownership of myself, and I try and go to the gym. I try and eat better. I try and educate myself. Second would be my family, things that are in my immediate circle of influence, my kids, my wife. Third would be the community, so people that I live next door to. And then fourth would be people of another nation or a neighboring country. You're close, but it's not really your problem. They showed this heat map of like all of these like responses. And people on the left had a completely different heat map. It showed that they had a very small signal on how they take care of themselves. They had no real interest in their immediate family, their immediate community. And then the heat map started emerging on the fourth and fifth and sixth concentric circle, which is people over there, people in a different country, people, immigrants, if I'm just going to like take a hot button.
That's a great example.
You know, and it's like, oh, well, I've got to worry about the disabled trans Iraqi over there and ignore my dog. It was so bizarre. You overlay these two heat maps of responses from people that opted into the survey, the study. You're going to probably live a more fulfilling life the more you focus on the stuff that you can actually control and have input in. And most people that are super unhappy, that focus on what the group consensus is, they're the ones that are worried about that they can't control anyway. It's crazy.
All right, so I know what some of you are thinking. Even if you generally agree with this, if you're going to think critically, you're going to say, wait a minute. I know a lot of fat ass lazy conservatives, right? Dudes that are not taking care of their health. And that guy just said it was their number one priority. But if you read the study was not about what people do. It's about what they think about. Okay. It's about what do they think about? What is most important to them? When it's laid out in front of them, what is more important to you, your personal health, okay, or the plight of North African immigrants in London, for instance? And the conservatives, by and large, would say, my health is more important than that. People can believe a thing, know a thing, and still not do a thing. And that's true of both liberals and conservatives, left and right, black and white, red and yellow, space aliens, and Napoleon Bonaparte reincarnated. It doesn't matter. That is, just understand, that is a thing. However, this does not surprise me. And I think all you have to do is take a trip right in your own country to like liberal subtard ground zero. Not everybody on the left is a liberal subtard. Okay. And some people would disagree with me and say there's degrees of how subtarded and how liberal. Okay, fine. Whatever you want. But you know what I'm talking about. Go to a place like Seattle. Okay. Go to a place like San Francisco. Okay. And just pay attention to what, walk the downtown area and pay attention to what the people there signal is the most important thing in their life. I was very recently in Seattle. The most important thing signaled by the people of Seattle is being important to them is our trans allies more than anything else. And it's not my bias. I'm pretty good at going, I don't really give a shit what you do because I don't live here, and just observing. And it was very clear that that's what it was. And if you listen to interviews like Man on the Street interviews, and not the ones that are just set up to make them look as dumb as they are, like who did we fight in the Revolutionary War? What, you know, what is the 4th of July really all about? Who was the first president of the United States? Like, not those, just where they actually talk to people, say, what are you concerned about? And by and large, you will hear people that are more right-leaning say, my family, my church, my neighborhood, my job, my home, my kids, their school. And you will hear liberals by and large focus and hone in on larger issues outside of their area of control and mostly outside of their area of influence. And I would surmise to you this, this is not even about who's right or wrong or who's better or worse. If you ask the average person who is a conservative that has at least enough money to live okay, are you happy? That person is generally happy. You get the same economic threshold for a liberal. Are you happy? I'm not going to say they're all miserable, but I'm going to say a hell of a lot more of them are miserable. They are absolutely miserable. And it's not because Orange Man's president. They were miserable when freaking Biden was president. Of course, who wasn't? They were miserable when Obama was president. And they weren't quite as mentally deranged and let out of the asylum yet. But these same people were miserable for 8 years when Bill freaking Clinton was president. And I submit to you, the more externally focused you are on things you don't control, the more miserable you're going to be. Because if you do that, you will not focus on good. You won't. You'll focus on negative. And when you make your sphere of concern the entire effing globe, and you're seeking out things to be upset about, you'll never run out of things to be upset about. You're as black-pilled as it gets. You're going to be miserable. And then you're going to blame every failure in your own life on they, them, whoever they, them are. And you don't mean it the way that you put it in your pronouns in your bio. You mean they, the powers that be, the man, the white man, whoever you think is keeping you down. And I really think that if most people, without even touching politics, if most people would just realize that your key to success and your key to happiness is internal, not external, and how you think drives how you act, and if you think a way, if you will also act consistently with that manner, that you'll have more success and happiness in your life. I actually wrote a couple books about this. That's really what these books are about. In fact, one of the laws in book one is focus on your circle of control and influence. Everything else is only for awareness. And that just kind of validates everything that I teach, in my view. You can disagree. You can be angry. You can think that it's really important that we support the rights of Venezuelan transsexual sex worker drug dealers. I just don't care about those people. And you don't either. What you care about is being seen caring, because one of the most informative statements that anybody made in a comment when I posted this to a few different places was, I don't know that it's actually true fully, because liberals are more likely to self-censor and give the answer that they think other people want to hear. And I think there might be a little bit of a mitigation there for some, but I think that's a problem too, because that means you're still focused externally. Maybe just not to the level that you want to be seen. In other words, they actually think that they are more noble because they care about things that you can't touch or control than you, because you only care about what you can touch and what you can control. The thing is, one's effective and the other one's a recipe for misery. You do what you want about with that, but I mean, that's where I get out of it. Now let's talk about real quick, and I'm going to go real quick on this, Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham died. Oh, well. Oh, no. Anyway, that's my entire response to it. Now, notice, I have a lot of negative things that I could say about Lindsey Graham. I have said a lot of negative things about Lindsey Graham. I can shut up the week they're burying him. I don't have to, like, tap dance on the man's grave or anything. But I also am not going to protect. But you know what? He was a statesman, and he gave his life to no, – I don't care. I don't care. And I'm going to put it to you this way. There's probably 1,000 people yesterday who died who, if you just look at who they were as people or on Saturday, right, that died, they were better people who did more for more people, even if nobody knows their names. They were people that went out and fed the homeless at their church every Sunday, right? There were people that ran all the PTA meetings. They were the dad that grew into a granddad, eventually became a great granddad, passed away in his old age. It was a World War II veteran, you know, and he took care of his sons, his grandsons, and even to some degree his great grandsons. And he was a great little league coach, right? Like, those people all matter more to me than this man. And I'm not going to pretend he matters because he was a senator. I'm serious. Like, I could bring up how he contributed to the coup in Ukraine, and that's still having people die to this day. I don't need to. Did I just do that? Oops, sorry. But I could keep going there, right? I could keep going there, but I'm not. I just don't care. And I think the important thing to understand is most of the people on your TV and on your computer screen and on your phone screen saying, what a great loss it is, they don't care either. They're just doing what they're expected to do. I think we're long past where we should all stop doing things just because we're expected to. You can have basic decency, but you don't need to defend a man who did as many things that were horrible for the world and for people in general as him. You can just say, I don't care. It doesn't matter. Now, I'm going to say something else, though. This is nothing directly to do with Graham. I promise you this is what you're going to see, though. You're going to see the two chambers gather in a circle under the rotunda under something called the Apotheos of Washington in the Capitol Dome, with his casket laying directly under that dome in the center, and they're going to have a ceremony. And it is not the kind of ceremony that they'll have for most people when they die in office. It's only certain people. And I'm not going to say anything about why they do it. I'm just going to say, if you know anything about ancient Rome and the honor that was considered the greatest honor that could be bestowed on a dead emperor or a dead general, you might be able to figure out what's actually going on there. And you might, when you figure it out, even think, is Jack got a little bit of Alex Jones in him or something like that? No, I just have eyes to see, ears to hear, and a knowledge of history. And it's very clear what they think they're doing, even though I don't think they're doing what they think they're doing. If anybody wants to guess what you think they think they're doing in the comments, I'd be interested to hear that. But again, I'm just going to tell you, find out again. I just gave you the name, but you can look it up if you don't believe me. What is the name of the picture of George Washington up on top of the dome? And what is the significance of that name? And why do we take certain special senators and congressmen and put their casket right under that picture and then have something that looks a little bit ancient, creepy circle around it? You figure that out for yourself, because if I tell you, you'll be less likely to believe me. All right. let's talk about something else. How about what I call false nostalgia? So I'm not going to put you through having to hear this music, because it's not this pretty young girl singing that you will hear. It's some terrible, and I mean terrible, rap song. Yeah, Jack doesn't like rap music, but I can be like, I can listen to that and understand why somebody else would. Like, I can, just like there's certain wines I don't like. Like, I really don't like Pinot Grigio, and I really don't like Sauvignon Blanc. But if I was judging a wine competition and I knew I was tasting Sauvignon Blanc, I could be like, it has that nasty grapefruit taste that it's supposed to have. This one's a 9.7, right? This music is terrible. But what she's doing here is she's driving a stick shift, and this is what everybody's nostalgic for. Now, I'm going to tell you, I think they're nostalgic for it. I'm just saying I think they're nostalgic for it because she's a pretty girl driving a stick shift. I think if I was doing this, I don't think this video would have went viral, right? And before I even talk about the false nostalgia, if you actually pay attention to her stick shift behavior here, she does start out in like first gear, and she does work her way up to fifth gear. And she's singing her little ass off, and then she's still slapping that stick around. And the only thing she's doing with it is going from 5 to 4, back to 5 to 4, back to 5, back to 4, once she's up in a higher gear. Why? Because she's doing it. It's performative. If you actually, and I think a lot of people watching this never drove a stick, so they think this makes sense. Because that's what they see on TV. You know, they got the squealing wheels. Everybody's always cocking the gun. And everybody's jamming and slamming the shift stick. But when you're on a straight road and you get up to speed and you go up into fifth gear, you just stay there until you significantly slow down, which she's not doing. Again, so now we have people being nostalgic for something they never even experienced, is what I'm going to say. But why do we have this nostalgia? Why do people seem to crave a stick shift, right? And if a stick shift was such a great thing, where'd they all go? Jack, people got too stupid to drive them. Now, I'm telling you, man, including adults when I was a kid, I knew some dumb dummies that knew how to drive a stick shift. Driving a stick shift does not require an immense cognitive ability. We all know what I'm talking about. You all know your Uncle Cooter or equivalent that can drive a stick shift like Ricky Bobby in the movie. He's dumber than a box of rocks. So it's not an intelligence thing. It's not a skill set thing. Dowie says he used to do it with a three on a tree. I learned to drive a stick in two different vehicles kind of at the same time. One was a GMC pickup, half ton with a three on a tree. And the other was my dad's Chevelle with a four on the floor, right? So, yeah, there's a little difference there. The three on the tree is a little, it gets you for a second until you realize, like, this has to go forward. But if they're so great, why'd they all go away? It's a conspiracy. I don't think that it is. I'm not aware of any government regulations that force manufacturers to switch over to sticks, to automatics. In fact, most cars will have a little bit better rated mileage with a stick shift, and a stick shift car is cheaper to build. So if you were a car manufacturer today and you were trying to make mileage requirements, and you could shave a couple miles to the gallon off every car in your fleet by making, you know, the majority of them stick shifts, and people would buy them, you would do that, right? Smartass Prepper says, I missed my floor high beam button. I did like that one. I really can't tell you why they took that away from us. I liked that one, right? Of course, you know, you had to use it with your stick shift. If you're pulling up on a place and the guy's coming the other way, then you had to be quick, right? Now you can just use your hands. But there's a reason they went away, because they're a pain in the ass, right? They're a pain in the ass when you're on a really steep hill and some subtard pulls like 1 inch off your bumper, right? But you know where they're really a pain in the ass? And this is why people that live in cities versus very rural places generally have very different opinions. It's not just because them shitty boys can't drive a stick shift. Wrong. Okay, everybody had to at one time. When I was a kid, you learned to drive a stick because half the cars on the road had one. Still. And the cars that were 10 years old and older that you could actually afford to buy used, like 70, 75% of them were stick shifts. Right? So everybody was in that same boat. So everybody had them. When you have to drive in bumper to bumper traffic, it is a pain in the ever loving ass, especially as you get older and your knees wear a little bit and you're constantly riding the clutch to go 3 feet only to push it back in and stop again. We stopped making them because automatics are a better transmission from a driver experience. You don't know because I have this MG Midget from 1966. Okay, whatever. Like, I'm in the 75% center of the bell curve. You're way over at the far edge, and it ain't the one that makes you smarter. It's the other side. Going to explain this one here. Okay? It's a better system. Why did records go away? Because digital music's a better system. That's why. Because I can walk around with my phone and I can have 20,000 songs on it and I can access all of digital music and the history of all music from it as long as I have a connection. I can beam it to 20 speakers located around my house. That's why. I can share it very, very easily. Like, it's just a better situation. But you want your record player. Do you know what's really going on? The nostalgia is for the time, not the thing. The nostalgia is for 1984, not the thing you had in 1984. The thing you had, you can have, but the time you can't have back. That's what people are really gravitating toward. But when you actually look at the performance of these things, you see why the product It changed and it metamorphosed into something better because there was market demand for it. I don't hear a lot of people telling me how great, you know, CDs were, because CDs were transitional technology. Cassette tapes were a transitional technology. 8-tracks were a transitional technology. Reel-to-reel was transitional technology. The first music you could really own and hold was a form of a phonograph. I love the video. If you guys have ever seen, there's a video from the 70s. It's Willie Nelson and Ray Charles singing Seven Spanish Angels. And at some point, Willie says something like, when they're introducing it, it's going to be a phonograph record soon, right? Like, that was the original. So that's why it locks in on people and it seems old. Now, if you're 15, I bet a cassette tape seems old, but its flaws are inherently visible right away. That's why we all know how to fix it, if it can still be fixed, with a pencil stub, right? We're not actually wanting these technologies back. We want the time back. Time's not coming back. And we don't even really want the time to come back, because when we were in that time, there's so many things that you would lose your mind if they took away from you today. You say you want to live in 1982, but if I drop you into 1982, we're still in the midst of initial economic recovery coming out of the 70s. People are driving cars that are literally falling apart, but yeah, they're affordable. Finding a job was hard, really hard. You don't really want that. What you want is the simplicity. And a lot of us, we were kids. So when you're kids, everything's great. You know, especially at that, it was a great time to be a kid. I'm not putting down the time. I'm just telling you, you don't want a stick shift and you don't want a record player. And hipsters, you don't want your past Blue Ribbon beer either. We know that shit sucks. And I think it's, why is this even worth talking about? Because we can recapture a lot of what we had then. And I'll give you an example. Put the devices away. I wish we didn't have them. Put it, that was always allowed. You can take the device and you can put it away. See? Look, wow. When we were just on vacation in Colorado, I'm about to find out the name of this game. I don't consider it a game that my wife brought up there with us. We have this card thing. And you draw a card and it'll say something like, everybody say something really nice about the person to your left. And the whole family's sitting in a circle. And there was, some of the questions were just fun too. Like, one of the questions was, of everybody in your family, if you needed someone to help hide a body, who would it be? You might guess that I was unanimously selected by my wife, my grandkids, my son, my daughter-in-law. It would be Papa Jack, right? Okay, sure. But it was great, and there were some incredibly nice, sweet things said about everybody in the family because we did this thing. But it all started with the kids complaining because they had to put their freaking phones away. But again, that was always allowed. So if you're nostalgic for the time, ask yourself what really about the time, because it wasn't a stick shift and it wasn't a pretty girl, you know, going from fourth to fifth to fourth to fifth to fourth to fifth to be performative for the Instagram that did it. There's something back there that you're missing, and that connection is really important, and we should try to recapture it. All right, next up, let's talk about propaganda in the modern age and how people that should be able to see things as opportunities or often can't. So I've been hearing this crap, they're taking all the farms away with the solar panels. I've been hearing this for several years now. And are there some farms that are being sold off and they happen to be in the right place from a transmission perspective that solar companies maybe buy that land and fill them up with solar panels? Sure. Is this a significant percentage of U.S. farmland? No, it is not. Okay? No, it is not. Are farms inherently good for the ecosystem? The way we do it today, right now, the farms where corn and soy and beans and wheat and rye and potatoes and all the big mega crops, right? Because if we're taking the giant farms away, that's what we're talking about. Do those farms contribute positively or negatively to the ecosystems of the surrounding? And the answer is it's inherently negative. Nothing has destroyed more topsoil and hence more life in the United States in the past 200 years than farming. I'm not anti-farming. I'm anti-farming the way that we do it. So when somebody says something like, hey, we need a place to put a lot more solar panels, and people are like, now you know why they don't put them where abandoned gas stations are? Because they're zoned commercial, and that is the most expensive acre of ground you'll ever buy, and it's actually cheaper to buy dirt, black farmland than that piece of land that's not big enough to do anything with. And you don't know why you don't put them on buildings? Well, I could bring a solar engineer along with a structural engineer to tell you how that's not really a great idea for most buildings until we start building buildings that are designed to have solar panels put on them. The first thing Sean Mills will tell you, and he does this for a living, is don't put them on your roof unless you have to. And you probably don't have to. Okay. I don't know why we don't put them in the middle of highways. Okay, well, I do, but I'm not going to bother. But the one thing I've said about this from the very beginning is a solar panel provides shade underneath it. That's how it works. It needs to get the sun so the sun doesn't go underneath it. And there's a tremendous amount of land out there that is very suitable specifically for grazing. In the case of the picture on your screen, cattle, another animal that works beautifully for this is sheep. And I'll bet you now you would have to be careful of some things here because they can break shit, but pigs would probably work pretty well too. You could definitely track your chickens through this setup. And it turns out, I mean, I don't know if you've ever paid attention enough to know this, but when it's hot out, cows like shade. And if you have solar panels set up the way these are, slightly at an angle, but mostly flat, and spaced out enough that sun can hit the ground as the sun moves, everywhere eventually gets some sun, plenty enough to grow grass and forbs. So what you have right here is one of the most regenerative, biointensive systems you could have. You have solar panels producing clean energy, but the solar panels get dirty. Okay, whatever, all right? They're not as dirty as coal, natural gas, and oil. They're not. They're really not. And we're getting better and better at making them. And they're going to make them anyway. And they're going to install them somewhere anyway. And you can't stop it. And the same people who talk all kinds of shit about going off grid, being permaculture, being regenerative, I got my solar stuff set in, I'm better than you, I got enough solar to actually run my whole house, they're the ones most upset about this. And why? It's the same reason they're all telling you the same stupid shit. The gay scanners are using all the water. No, they're not. It takes a hell of a lot more water to grow a freaking gallon of almond milk than for ChatGPT to give you an answer about who was president in 1831. It's nonsense. This is propaganda, and you can figure out the source if you want to, but I will tell you the source of this propaganda isn't a left-wing advocacy group or a right-wing advocacy group or a permaculture advocacy group in the United States. It's nowhere near the United States. Okay, it is a country, and it is the only country right now that can challenge the United States for global dominance from a military and economic standpoint. You should be able to figure out who it is now. If you can't, I can't help you. That does not want the U.S. to make these leaps and improve its situation while it's doing exactly that. But this could be everywhere. You think this is bad for the environment? I don't know what to tell you. If I could replace 10% of the corn and bean fields in America right now with this, with grazed systems under solar panels, I would do this. Now, here's the thing. Do you know what? We're not going to do that. 10% of the farmland will not be converted over to grazing and photovoltaic, and it won't be converted over to photovoltaic. We don't have enough places to put the solar panels close enough to where the energy demand is for that to happen. There are people who should not be allowed to have public opinions about energy. And it can start off with, if you can't explain transmission loss over distance on a power grid, you should shut right the hell up. If you can't explain what attenuation is, you should shut up. Okay? You need to stop, because you don't understand. If you don't know what impedance is, your opinion, right? You can say it. I'm not serious when I say they shouldn't be allowed to, but they certainly shouldn't be listened to, because they don't know anything. The same people that say just stop oil cry when you put solar panels in the middle of a field. I don't know what to tell you. Oh, did you think that you were on the opposite side with those crazy people? No. No, they don't like it either. It's harming nature, because nature's a soybean plant, apparently. Now, I will tell you that that picture I just had up there for you, let me go ahead and bring it back. You turn that over to me or some people that know a hell of a lot more than me, and the biodiversity in that field can make a farm field look like a square plot on the moon. Seriously. There is room for everything there. And if you use herbicides, well, then put a cow there and you won't need an herbicide. You see how that works? Put a sheep there and you won't need an herbicide. Oh, this is not a theoretical thing either. This is actually a farm. I think it's in either Minnesota or Michigan or somewhere Midwest. I actually found this picture and then looked up the farm it mentioned on LinkedIn. And they're doing this. And they're not only doing this themselves, they're actually renting grazing services using sheep for other people that have these systems in place already. But they don't put the panels high enough. See, here's the thing. The person that says that, this is what you're telling me. You don't want a solution. You want to be outraged. You're just like the left. Right? And when you say, but the ones around me are all too low to the ground to do that with. You know what you're doing? We should ban guns because somebody over there shot somebody with a gun and shouldn't have done it. So since he doesn't use it responsibly, no one can have him. It's the same tactic. You didn't know you were doing it when you were doing it, but you are. You are. That's how that works, right? So you are not going to stop farmers from selling their farms to move to Florida. Like one person was very upset about on Facebook and told me I was drinking my own Kool-Aid because his neighbor farmer sold his farm and went to Florida. Again, I think when you're done with an asset that's appreciated in value, you should be able to sell it and move to Florida or move to Costa Rica or El Salvador or France or the freaking moon if you want to. That's it. You don't get to control whether or not somebody chooses to sell because they don't want to do a job anymore. So you're not going to stop it. But what you could do, instead of going to your local town council or county planning commission or whatever, we did not have solar panels. And they're like, hey, you know, we're not going to give this revenue up that we're going to have with these, and we're not going to pass laws that tell Farmer Johnson he can't sell his farm. And we don't want Farmer Johnson's plural, pissed off at us because we put restrictions on what can be done with their farmland. There's the land's already zoned agricultural. It's already up to the new property owner to pay all the back taxes if they convert it. So we don't want that. So they're just going to not listen to you. And you're going to get labeled a Luddite, which you kind of are, and you're going to get ignored, and you're not going to prevent anything. But I'm going to say, I think if you were to go into, especially in farm country, and say, doesn't this look like a better alternative? Look at the happy cattle. Look at the lush green grass. Look at the lack of any real problem with water runoff. All we have to do is put in some requirement or guidance or incentive to do this instead. That's all you got to do. Now, will that work everywhere you try it? No. But you know what it has? It has a hell of a lot better of a chance of working. And this is why people get angry. When people have a problem that they don't actually want a solution for, they just want it to go away, or they want commiseration on it, when you give them a solution, they get angry. And Dowie here is saying it's emotional thinking. It absolutely is emotional thinking. It's emotional thinking. Because if you solve the problem or you point out an actual solution, you've ruined their ability to be angry, which is what they really want. We love outrage as humans. We like to be outraged. We like to be angry. And we like to get together in a little group and all yell at the other monkeys and throw some shit at them and then have them throw shit back at us. We like to fight like that. We get an instant dopamine hit. This is evolutionary. This goes back to when we were a tribe defending our village from the other village of the evil tribe that wanted our village, and they felt the same way about us. And when we take this stance of social media, we get that same dopamine hit. But when somebody gets up in the middle and doesn't say, I'm going to take all the shit that I have and throw it at you, they don't actually get mad about that. Then they just tell you you're stupid and you don't know, and then you tell them they're stupid and they don't know, and both sides feel good about themselves and both sides think they own the other. But nobody gets really upset about that. When you say, look, here's a solution to the problem that actually works better for everyone. Well, that is absolutely worthy of rage because you disrupted the dopamine feedback loop. The person created themselves in their little bubble where they're not actually doing anything and they're not required to do anything. See, because what the person will say is, well, I don't get politically involved with people don't listen to it. Because you know what I just said is true. You know, if you go down to your county planning commission and try to make, we want a law that says we can't put solar here. It ain't going to happen, right? But you know that if you went to your county planning commission with a plan like this and said, and if you took the time, if you contacted the person at this farm, if you got some other people doing it, if you put together a group of case studies and you went and presented that, you'd probably open up some eyes. And if you do it at a planning meeting when the public is there, there'd probably be a lot of farmers going, "Why, hell, Bill, that don't look so bad, does it?" And so, but it wouldn't be over. It's not easy. It's not like they would just all fall down and do it. You'd actually have to become a champion for a thing that you claim you care about. Oh, did I ruin it for you? I'm sorry. That's my job. I'm supposed to ruin your fantasies. We're adults now. I'm not here to talk to you about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. That's not what we're doing. We're talking about reality. And if you don't like it, well, it's okay. You don't have to like it. All right, moving on. Let's talk about what Rhode Island did. Rhode Island decided they are going to ban self-checkout, sort of. The stores have to keep a ratio of 1 to 3 cashiers to all self-checkouts. So it's not that they can't have a self-checkout. It's that if you had 6 self-checkouts available, there has to be 2 people there to help you when something goes wrong. Okay? It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And I'll give you some reasons it's not going to work. First of all, what is the fine? What is the fine? $500 a day. Okay, the average grocery store is open at least 14 hours a day. 2 extra employees cost more than $500 all in, way more than $500 all in, okay, because I'm paying Social Security, insurance. I'm talking about burden labor here in a job that has a nationwide average now of about $16 an hour. I don't know if you know that, right? So what are you gonna do? How's this work out? Now, so the store just does the math and says, well, we just won't do it. And if they get and they don't automatically get fined, right? They put the flock cameras in the store, right? They put that out in the parking lot for you, not for Kroger or Publix or Winn-Dixie if they're still around, or Albertsons or whatever, right? They didn't put that in there, so they don't know unless somebody complains. So, you know, old man Billy goes down and I don't like this, so he calls the inspector, right? $500 a day, they'll just pay it. Well, there's a trigger that if you go more than 30 days, the fine goes up to $1,000, and if it's not corrected then, it can become a felony. But who are you going to charge? The CEO of Albertsons? The manager of the Albertsons that's just doing what he has to because he was told to? Who are you going to find? Who are you going to bring a felony charge against here? And the answer is no one, because the other thing it is, the law itself requires that these violations be consecutive. So all I got to do is double shift some people once every couple weeks. It's never consecutive now. It's up to you to prove that it was. Oh, but there's another way. There's another way. So what you got to do when you're dealing with people with pitchforks and torches is, instead of fighting them, you send them at the other party that sent them at you. You make them more angry at them than they are at you. So if I'm running a grocery store, and you actually pin me down with this, and I'm sitting there, and I've got 9 self-checkout stations, which I'm sure many of you have seen places with that, and I only have 2 people, I just close 3 of them. Now, let me ask you this. How pissed off are you when you're standing at the grocery store, and there's a line, and you see there's 9, 10, 12 self-checkouts, something like that, and like half of them are closed, and half of them that are open have the people trying to use them that just need to go get in the other regular line and wait because they're at their limit of mental capacity. They look like they're trying to solve a calculus problem with a case of explosive diarrhea at the same time when they ate glass. I mean, their limit has reached. They're trying to figure it out. They can't figure it out. And half of the stations that could be open are closed. Well, you're pissed off, as you should be. Why do you have them there if they're not open? So if I'm the manager of that store and I'm asked that question, because I know I will be, I would say, well, you need to talk to your city council, your state rep, whoever did this shit, and you need to let them know how pissed off you are, because I just don't have enough people right now. You can't make me hire people that aren't available, that aren't qualified to do the work. So I just don't have the people here, right? Or I go hire somebody for just over minimum wage that wants that pay at that level so they can say they have a job and still collect their government benefits for being below the poverty line, put them to work part-time, don't train them for shit, and they're over there with you looking like this. I can't figure it out. It doesn't matter. I don't care. And I tell them, no, it'll be all right. Do your best. You're not going to get fired. I can bleed you out. Or if I'm really smart and I'm a large chain and this doesn't work for me at all, I guess I just don't need to operate in Rhode Island. Bye-bye. Well, that can't happen. Ask Portland. Ask Seattle about that, okay? Because it's dead there for different reasons. This is stupid. This is, I think it was about the 15 or 1600s. Somebody figured out, hey, this water wheel thing, and we put a stone and it grinds grain into flour. If we turn the stone vertical, and we replace the stone with a piece of metal with points on it in a circle, and we spin it, we can push a log through there really fast, turn it into a board. And they told the sawman, hey, look, you won't have to sit down in that pit doing this shit all day long, going home with sawdust in the crack of your ass and in your ears. But that's my job. So the sawman went on strike, and then the sawman burnt down several mills before it was quashed. And the sawmen were never going to stop the advancement of technology. It was never going to happen. Do you think milkmen liked the car? Have you ever even thought about that? Milkmen in the car? So once the car came, people could move on their own. You didn't need people to bring you shit. soon after the car came, the modern supermarket came and refrigeration came. And now the milk was sitting at the store. And Bill or Tammy went to the store once a week, picked up a gallon of milk, and the milkman was out of business. Now, the milkman stuck around in pieces, parts, and niches up until the 70s, right? I remember when people used to steal milk crates and, like, you could get in trouble for it. And what did we steal milk crates to do? Mainly, we stole them to store record albums. Most of you young folks don't know what I'm talking about. Just trust me, that's what we did. We stole the milk crate from the milkman that came with the glass milk bottles in it. And then we just stole it. And then we took our records, which were about to become archaic and pushed out of existence like the milkman. We put our record albums in there because, check it out, a standard LP fits almost perfectly in one of those cases. That's why everybody stole them. Put a lot of other stuff in them, but that was it. Now the milkman is called Instacart. Now he's on fire today, guys. Y'all got to come check out a live feed and just to experience the Dowie part of it. But it's not going to work. Okay, now Trump. Let's talk about Trump. Trump is going to charge tolls. He's super serial. All right, some of y'all know where that's from. He's super serial. He really means it. He's going to do it. It's going to happen. He says so, so we know it's true. He was also super serial about making Canada the 51st state and invading Greenland, too, and those things didn't happen yet anyway. Is this serious? I think it is, but if you made me guess exactly what the angle is here, it's Gaza 2.0. But Gaza, they committed genocide. I know. I'm not talking about that part. I have a pretty decent memory, and my short-term memory still works, so I guess I'm not old enough to have Alzheimer's yet. So not so long ago, when the Israelis stopped just bombing the shit out of Gaza every day, and they're like, okay, now we have to do something here. We can't just leave it that way. Remember what Trump said we were going to do? Oh, it could be beautiful. It could be a resort. The United States is going to take it over. Remember that? Remember everybody said he was crazy? Remember that? And the right said, well, he's not really going to do it. And the left said, he's crazy. He says he's going to do it. And the right said, well, I hope he doesn't, because I think that's crazy. But he ain't going to do it. And like, but all of a sudden you start, like, everybody starts going, I think he's going to do this. And then what happened? A whole coalition of Arab states went, oh, no, 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 no. And they offered to rebuild and fund it. Which kind of the people that should be, like, again, the whole study with conservatives and liberals, and they're concerned about things way over there. And people that, you know, focus on what they control are concerned mostly about, like, right in their own backyard. Or if it's another country, like the one right next to them. Yeah, that's who should do it. That's who should be – all these countries that are Arabic, all these countries that say, you know, Israel shouldn't exist, or at least they should stay in their own lane, and they say that they care about Palestine, then why aren't you doing something about it? And then for years people said that, and then all of a sudden Orange Man comes in with this ridiculously stupid idea, because turning Gaza into an American-owned – set of hotels by the sea, like Atlantic City or some shit, is stupid. I'll admit it. But he's just crazy enough that the people over there believed and went, we'll help. We'll do something. Right now, this is how the United States feels. I'm not saying we're right, but I'm saying, like, the Trump administration, this is how they feel about the Strait of Hormuz and the whole situation in Iran. All of you said these people were a problem. All of you said this country was a problem. Even most of the Middle Eastern countries, like, yeah, Iran's a problem. All you European countries that you're part of NATO that we have subsidized for 75 years said this was a problem. Every American president since 1979 said this was a problem. We've done something about it. You expect us to keep the strait open. And none of you are willing to do anything to help. Fine. We'll charge you for it. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I think the odds of this working are lower than they are of it not working. I don't think we're going to charge anybody anything. I don't think it's ever going to happen. Even if it looks like it's happening, I don't think it's going to be happening. I think the play here was, well, it worked with Gaza. But it's not perfect. I didn't say it was perfect. Politicians don't do perfect. They do enough to get a problem off their desk. That's it. So I think Trump's just using the, hey, it worked before. And Trump is a shrewd negotiator, and he uses a lot of bullshit, bluster, and bluffing in his negotiations. And so, hey, I have my whole freaking Navy here. Hey, I'm not letting any ships from Iran out till this shit comes to an end. And trust me, one thing the Navy's good at is not letting ships out of places. And if they need to put a hole in an engine, they'll do it. They've already done it. So they have every bit of capability to track these vessels. You came from an Iranian port, turn around or get a hole blown in you. We won't sink them. We won't kill a bunch of innocent people, but they will put a stop to them leaving. And we're going to make sure all the rest of you can get out, at least to the best of our ability. So if you'd like to get out, we'd like some money, please. Am I advocating for that? No, I'm just calling balls and strikes here. And I think that the goal is simply to get other countries to step up and aid. I don't think it's going to work, but that's the goal. I think that's what's really going on. And as crazy as that might sound, I think it sounds a lot less crazy than, you know, as it's being reported by CNN, MSNBC, MS Now, whoever the hell they are, Rachel Maddow, except, like, I think that actually tracks with, not maybe makes sense from a standpoint of evaluating its odds of success. If you're willing to stop having TDS and screaming and shrieking, or the side that's even worse on some levels, if you're willing to stop kissing the orange beanbag, okay, and stop just thinking everything Trump does is genius, and you're willing to critically analyze what has the behavior been up till now and what was the real agenda behind it and did it work or not, and would that lead a person with Trump's ego to believe I can pull this off again? I think this is the most logical, plausible thing. And the only reason I'm covering it is because, one, everybody's flipping out about it, but two, because it's a lesson in critical thinking. It's a lesson in systems thinking. The purpose of the system is what it does. Well, what has it done in the past? It's used these grandiose, extremely crazy-sounding things that we're going to do to try to get other people to do the thing for us. I would even say to some degree that's what went on with Canada and Greenland. Greenland, I think the whole goal there is to get Greenland to actually declare independence and to turn them into something more like Guam than a state. And I think the deal with Canada is simply to renegotiate trade and trade agreements. That's all that is. So, believe it or not. All right, so let's talk about Bitcoin. So last cycle, I called the low at, like, I think 14.4, and it got down to like 15.2 was the low. And I was off by then $600, $800, something like that, $600 to $800, right? Pretty damn close. And I even called the time pretty accurate. I said it'll be in the fall, and it was. And when we hit the bottom, we didn't immediately recover. We continued to lally and drag and drag. And then we went face burning up in the next part of the cycle, which is just the typical four-year cycle of volatility in Bitcoin, again, feature not a bug. I think we're on track to do the same thing. But before we hit all the way to the bottom, and long after, I kept using a single term with you guys. Do you remember what it was? Accumulation trough. This side, when you see people saying shit in social media or in comments right here, it happens right here in a live stream, right here. I see some of y'all did. When it gets to fill in the blank, I'm backing up the truck. It's like, bitch, you ain't got no truck. What truck are you going to back up? $500 worth, right? You don't have a truck. You just don't. And the reason that dollar cost averaging works, because systems are more powerful than willpower. That's why. If you want to be on a diet and you want to stop eating food that's bad for you, you need a system to help manage your diet more than willpower. Because if the willpower will sooner or later fail and you'll eat the tiramisu or whatever it is. Spending money works the same way. When we spend it, it's gone. And when we invest it, it's exchanged for the investment, which is easier to hold than the money, and it doesn't burn with inflation the way that the money does. The dollar's a melting ice cube. Bitcoin's way down, and it's been down, and it's been up, and it's been down, and it's been up, and when in doubt, zoom out, and you can see what it's done over the years. It's a consistent up. Track the bottom number, not the top one, and everything gets clear. That will happen again. But you should be buying Bitcoin now. That does not mean to go liquidate something and buy Bitcoin now. What I'm saying, if you did have a lump sum, I would tell you, like, think about, like, between now and February, and, like, how many weeks is that, or how many days is that, and take that lump sum and divide it by that number and set up a daily or weekly buy. But I say DCA every day. You know, if you're going to buy 300 a month, that's great. That's $10 a day. And some of y'all that say, I can't do that, spend $5 a day or more at Starbucks or the equivalent and drink Starbucks. I bet you have a vice. I bet you have something that you piss money away on. And it's really interesting what happens when you make people track their spending. They never want to do it. But when you get them to actually do it, it's interesting when you say, all I want you to do is just track every dollar you spend for the next 90 days. Then I want you to go back and look through it and each spend, and then don't count your electric bill and your rent and your car payment, because that's non-discretionary. So all you got to track is discretionary spending. Every single expenditure, looking back, and do this like 2 days before payday when you're broke, okay? And whichever payday you're the brokest at, it's the end of the month, beginning of the month, middle of the month, whatever, right? Pick that one. Now go look at that list. Every spend you made, you're like, I would absolutely do that again. I'd rather have whatever I bought right now or the experience I'm still carrying than that money. If I could have that 10 bucks back, I wouldn't take it. I'm glad I spent it. Then make an orange circle for everyone you're like, oh, no, and make a red X for everyone you're like, I would totally give that up to have money back now. And just look at it. It's amazing what happens if you can get people to do that. But that same psychology plays into investing. Because if we say, I have enough money to buy a coffee for $5 every day, well, you also have enough money to like buy a coffee maker and a thermos, skip a month, because you got to buy coffee and filters too. And from that point on, put $5 a day into Bitcoin, it's $150 a month. Or put it into fractional shares of ETF, or fractional shares of SLV or GLD, or anything better than a melting ice cube that is a dollar. Because I've been told, you think everybody should do nothing but buy Bitcoin. That is not what I've ever said. You heard that because you wanted to. You heard that because you're bitter. You heard that because you think I got lucky because I started buying Bitcoin long before you did, right? You don't really mean that. You're just angry and you're bitter. And so you have to twist what I'm saying to fit your narrative so that you can reject it. Because I am not saying you should only buy it. Who here doesn't think I own silver? Who here doesn't think I own stocks and securities? Who here don't think I actually keep some cash too? Not the bulk of my investment. Who here doesn't think I own any real estate? So do you know how stupid a person sounds? They're like, he just thinks the only investment is Bitcoin. It's just going to go to zero. And wait till the internet, they take the internet down. And then when there's no internet, he'll be broke. Like, you won't be. Okay? Like, whatever, man. But this is the accumulation trough. This is where, if you've been waiting to act, again, this is not go cash in some mutual fund and buy all Bitcoin. This is start setting up that regular routine buy. And if you already have one, this would be the time when it makes a lot of sense to double it if you can. If you can. If you've already pushed yourself, well, then I get it. But like if you were doing 5 and now you can do 10, or you were doing 10 and now you can do 20, or if you were doing 100 a week and now you can do 200, if you were doing 100 a week, you can do 150. And generally, the perfect time to start that double purchase is when you fall through the last cycle's high, which almost always happens. And what I mean is, we hit like 69,000 of a high in the last cycle, and then we hit 120 odd whatever in this cycle. We're now under the last cycle's high. And when we were at 14, we were also under the last cycle's high. You see how that works? And that is a great signal point. Once you're through that floor, That's where you increase your buy. Or don't. It's okay. You can have fun staying poor. That's fine if you want to HFSB. It's all right. All right. Next, I got great economic news for you guys. So you don't need Bitcoin anymore. You can buy a house now, millennials and Gen Zs, and the economy's in full recovery. See, there was a projection that when the numbers that just came out, inflation annualized for June would be 3.8%. It's pretty bad. 3.8% annual inflation sucks. But it's only 3.5% inflation. Now, your Federal Reserve is supposed to maintain inflation at around 2%. And I've always said, from the day they were issued the mandate of full employment and keep inflation at about 2%, they've never maintained that for any significant period of time in their history of over 100 years of existence. So maybe it's time to get rid of them, but we're not going to get rid of them. But first of all, if you actually believe the CPI and don't understand why people like me refer to it as the CP lie, which is the Consumer Price Index, I don't know if there's any hope for you. When your grandma used to look at the inflation number and wonder if her Social Security would go up enough to cover it, and she was looking at the official inflation rate, it was like the price of beef went up by this much. Okay. Well, now what they do is they just keep substituting things. So first we went from steak to like cheap cuts, and then like cheap cuts to ground meat. But now we're like chicken, and now we just call it meat. Which is whatever the hell they say it is, apparently. And there's many examples like that. And I think this is one of the places where, you know, I'm hard on young people. I believe there's more opportunity today than there was when I was 20. Because I can point to the opportunities. It doesn't mean that the economic situation, especially for people that just have a regular job, is not more complicated and more difficult and harder than it was when we were younger. If you're in my age bracket or older, but you got to give these kids some freaking understanding, because they're not going to listen to you until you do. And when, you know, it takes about 7 years more work for a person today to buy their first house than it did just 25, 30 years ago. You know, and when did I buy my first house? Well, 1997. And I was in my mid to late-ish 20s. And that's a lot harder to do today than it was then. And it ain't interest rates. My interest rate was like 6.75% when I bought my first house. But you know what I paid for it? You don't forget this number, what you paid for your first house. I don't care how old you are. $84,250, just under $85,000. You can't buy a loaded F-150 for that today. So don't tell these kids that it's just all that they did it to themselves and whatever. You sound stupid when you say that. And you know what? Those of you like the boomers stole everything. You sound stupid too. Stop being stupid. Do you know who wants you to be stupid? The people that count all the money and make all their money off your backs. The people that actually stole it. The people that didn't steal it, they constantly are stealing it every day. I had somebody recently tell me, you don't understand. The boomers stole it just with Social Security alone. What the F are you talking about? You're talking about a boomer today retiring on Social Security, making $1,400 a month in Social Security. The price doesn't matter. It does matter. Of course it does. Because that person, if all the money they paid into Social Security and all the money that was matched by their employer that they paid into Social Security had gone into the most boring fixed interest government bonds, that person would be a multi-millionaire today. And instead, they get to live just the ass crack of a hair over what the government says is the poverty level. And they have that poverty number the same no matter where you live, as though it costs the same amount of money to live in California as Texas. And so how do they steal it? They're getting their own money back that was stolen from them. And they're not even getting back what was stolen from them. But you think they're stealing it for you? Because the money you pay in goes to pay those people? The money they paid in went to pay the silence and the freaking GIs. This is, both sides are speaking absolute gibberish nonsense. Mike and the Mechanics wrote a song in the 1980s, 86, I believe. And one of the lines in it was what? Every generation blames the one before, and all of their frustrations comes beating at your door. That was a boomer song when Gen X were still teenagers and wet behind the ears, and they were mad at their parents the same way you're mad at them now. It ain't never going to change. And the reason that you get tied up in this propaganda is because the system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, creating a class warfare state so we can move further into the bondage of socialism. And the very people that think they're fighting it the hardest, some of y'all are doing the most to actually make it happen. And it's going to be interesting, you know, if I'm still around, maybe when I'm, if I make it like it to be a 90-year-old, to see some of these people that are 35 right now acting like the boomers owe them something, to see what you guys look like in your face when you finally hit retirement. And somebody says, the Gen Zs are so greedy, they're the stingiest generation in history, and they won't share what they have with us. Because it's going to happen. I might not be here to see it. But I don't need to be here to see it. I'm like Karnak the Magnificent from the Johnny Carson show. I can see the future, and that's yours. You can either accept that, you can be mad at me, do what you want. I don't care. Let's move on. But, yeah, I just wanted you to know that it's only 3.5% inflation. You'll be fine. Your ice cube's melting a little slower, so you're good to go now. And I want to warn you on this last thing. I know this is more a educated audience than most. And I know that you guys have been around a while and you've seen a thing or two, kind of like farmers insurance. But there is a whole new rash of phishing scams going around today to try to get access to things like your bank account, your credit card, your PayPal account, your crypto account, your crypto wallet, your hardware wallet, all of it. And it's all using the same approach. Our terms and conditions have changed, and we want you to book a 15-minute phone call with us to go through it with you. Or you can click this link and do it yourself. Okay? None of these are legitimate. No bank, no credit card company, no hardware wallet manufacturer is going to do anything like that. If you do things the right way, you know, Trezor or whoever doesn't even know who you are. If you don't buy it directly, they don't, as long as you buy it sealed and all, and comes without the firmware installed, you're not worried about it being hijacked or anything. Most of the time, they shouldn't even know who you are. How do they know who you are? And when you start getting them from places you've never done business with, well, then you're like, hey, I understand this. But when it's something that just happened, maybe you just did something in your bank account, or you just made a payment on your credit card, it's fresh in your mind, and that pops up. So here's the deal. I don't care how real it looks. Any email that ever tells you to do anything with your private login, private information, whatever, just delete it. If you're really concerned, go log into whatever it is. Now, your hardware wallet doesn't have a place to log in, and your terms and conditions don't mean an effing thing. But if you think, well, maybe there was fraudulent activity on my bank account, call your bank, not the number in the email. Call the customer service at your bank. Log into your bank account and look and see if there's a fraudulent charge in the, you know, whatever account you have there. Anything like that. Do not fall for this, because it is getting better. And as much as I love using AI for good, it can be used for bad. And they are getting more and more tuned in to what will actually trigger a response and get a response from me. And it's not just these things. There's a ton of scams that are going around that are interesting. Like one that's going around this year that wasn't last year when I released my first book is a scam to scam authors. So the first one I got, you know, I sort of kind of in a way fell for it in that I thought it was legitimate. I didn't do anything or give them anything, but I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I just emailed the guy back and said, I'm on vacation right now. Get in touch with me next week and maybe we can do this. And the email goes like this. I run a book club And we have, you know, 1,700 members, 17,000 members, 9,000 members, 4,000 members, 7,000, just some random number. We have a meetup page. They won't just let anybody set up a meetup page, guys, right? And maybe even a website. And what we do is we have all our readers read your book, and then we set up like a Zoom call, and all our readers ask you questions. And you, and this is why I think your book's so wonderful and why you'd be a good fit for us. Well, that sounds great if you're an author. And then, you know, you actually read the whole email when you have time. And it's like, and we do all these wonderful things. You get mentioned in this sheet and this newsletter. And, you know, there's a notification goes out to the press about it. And it's only $3,000 or $300. You know, they'll come up with some number. And it could be a lot or even just a few hundred bucks that you have to pay to help support what they're doing for you. And so what I did for shits and giggles, because what they're doing, they're using AI to find authors on bestsellers lists and things like that, on like these lower tier lists like I'm on. And so I went to AI and I said, well, okay, how do I respond to this? And basically I started sending these people a thing back that says, when you can show me in the club's bylaws and that the club actually has a bank account, and that I would be giving the money to the club itself instead of you. And no, I'm not going to pay you in Bitcoin or PayPal or whatever. Then maybe we could talk, and then you just don't hear from them anymore. But there will never come a time when you'll stop getting scam phishing emails in your inbox. And you need to realize that all it takes is a couple little tweaks to it, and it looks totally different to you. And it can always hit you on a day that, you know, maybe something was already going on. Maybe you just dealt with a fraudulent charge on your credit card. And since that happened, you think, oh, it could have happened again. And that's the game, because if you scattershot this out to, you know, 50 million people, you're going to hit, you know, 1% of them, which is a lot on a day like that. And then maybe 1% of those are going to fall for it. So no crypto account, no crypto wallet, soft or hard, is going to send you an email telling you to click a link or to make an appointment to have a teleconference with them because of a change in terms of service or anything else. Your bank is never going to send you, your credit card company is never going to send you an email that says to confirm this, click this link. If they're legitimate, they're always going to tell you, go log into your account. Because that's how these security specialists operate. The people that run the communications and security for these companies know all the tricks, and they know that the number one thing that you can do to prevent this is never set the standard of we tell you to click a link. That's why they don't tell you to click a link, if you've noticed. And they certainly are not going to have Chase Bank or whatever do a 15-minute teleconference with you to explain their 550-page terms of agreement. So don't fall for it. All right. With that, guys, I appreciate everybody that tuned in today. I want to tell you guys about my item of the day today, which I brought around about a month ago. And I actually brought this around right after I got back from Colorado, because I learned about it on an airplane. I was on my airplane with my free Wi-Fi from American, and I was watching videos, and Alton Brown came on. Yep, the Alton Brown, the TV chef, and he was making a steak. And he said he likes to salt his steaks. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's what you do when you make a steak. I'll put it in the refrigerator for a day and let it age and let it draw out all the moisture because you get a better sear. And I'm like, well, Alton, tell me something I don't know. Almost as if on cue, like he heard me. He says that I like to put this little fan in the refrigerator with it and set it on like medium speed. It helps wick the moisture off the steak, and you get a really tacky, dry surface that way, and you get a great sear. And I went, damn it, I need to buy one of these. So I went to Amazon, and I started looking for portable, rechargeable fans and scrolling through them, and there it was. The one that he had. I don't know if it's the same brand, but it was the exact same form factor. Antelope was the Antelope, I don't know how you say it, fan that I found, and I read the reviews and they were good, and I ran the fake checker on it and it came up that they weren't fake reviews. And so I ordered one. It was like $13. And I tried it for its intended purpose. And you know what? It worked freaking amazing. I mean, amazing. I have never dropped a ribeye onto my flat top and gotten a sear like I did when I used this little fan. But then I realized something else. It's a fan. It goes places. It keeps you cool. That's what its real purpose is. So it has multi-purposes. It's a function stacking device. And it charges just with a standard USB-C to regular USB side. So you can charge things with it, or you can use any USB charger to charge with it. And it lasts really a long time. So, yes, I highly recommend it. And I would ask you to always do your online shopping when you can anyway, starting at tspaz.com. You do that, you help us out. Next up, though, I'm going to remind you one more time before we sign off today about my book, Laws of Life, Book 2. A bunch of you have bought it. We've sold a few thousand books already. So appreciate you, the ones of you that bought it. But I only have two reviews. Please give me reviews. It really helps a lot. When they brought the reviews over from the first version of Laws of Life, Book 1 to the second edition, they raked out like 30 of them on me. So I ended up with like 72 instead of 100 and a couple. That sucks. But at least I have, you know, 70 odd reviews on the book. I have two on this. And a lot of you have told me you started reading it and you really like it. And that's great. And thank you. But what would mean the world to me is if you can just jump on Amazon. You know, I know not everybody wants to do it. Just, you know, give me a review. And if you think it's only 4 stars, don't give me 5. If you think it sucks, you can say that too. But reviews are reviews, and I need some reviews. So I'd really appreciate it if you guys could do that for me. The workbooks will be out very shortly, along with some courses that will be going with those books. And then I can start really pouring it on the gas to my next book, which is going to be called Me, Myself, and AI. That should be out by this fall. Thanks to everyone who tuned in today. Tomorrow we'll have a fantastic interview. If I had my paperwork in front of me, I'd tell you who it is. But no, so I'll just sign off. Catch you tomorrow with another just episode. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Revolution.